Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest in the OIS podcast series. My name's James Henderson, and I'm Director of the Gas Programme at OIS. Today I'm joined by two of my colleagues, Mike Fullwood, who's a Senior Research Fellow, and Jack Sharples, who's a Research Fellow, and we're going to discuss our latest quarterly report, which is focused on the short and medium-term outlook for gas markets. Mike, perhaps I can turn to you first. Firstly, welcome back to the podcast. I know you're a regular contributor. So in our review of prices, we noted that the margin for US LNG exporters remains negative at the moment. Do you think that's going to cause sufficient shut-ins to balance the market later in the year?
Thank you, Jim, and thanks for inviting me again. We've already seen probably from the US sort of 100 plus cancelled cargoes already this year, sort of starting about cancellation in March, April for deliveries or for offtake a couple of months later. They sort of began when the margin looked as though it was turning negative, and the margin sort of a net back from the Japan or Europe to deducting Henry Hub and to see what margins kind of left over to cover the liquefaction costs. So the margin is still very negative. So in terms of balancing the market, I mean, it's sort of balancing already, albeit in the $1 range, which is not great for suppliers. Overall, this year, mainly in the summer, we're probably looking at 200 plus cargoes, which broadly approximates to about 20 BCM needing to be taken off the market. We're possibly heading for that at the moment. Although outside the US, it's difficult to know when cargoes are not being lifted or cancelled because they don't tend to announce these things. But again, European storage will be the key. If there's kind of room in storage and LNG can continue to come in, but when the storage in Europe's full, and Jack may say a bit more about this in a minute, then that's when the kind of the moment of truth arrives in the market. So overall, we're looking at 200 plus cargoes. I suspect we're well more than halfway there if you take the whole world into account, but we do need a few more to be taken off.
Because basically the only ones we can see being shut in are the US ones. They're the only ones that are transparent.
Yes, that's correct, yeah. The others we're not sure about, but we've seen Nigeria volumes being lower, Russian volumes being lower. The only country staying up producing like mad is Qatar.
And how far ahead do we see these shut-ins? I mean, when are we going to know if we're going to have enough shut-ins if we take the US as sort of 50%? I mean, when are we going to know whether there are enough US shut-ins to make this all work without storage being filled?
Well, the decision in July to in the US it should be upon us sort of round about now, and we're recording on July 20th, which is for liftings in September. So that should give us a clue. And by the time you get to the August decision point, then that's October liftings. So I would expect to see a lot lower shut-ins or cancellations for the August decision point. But again, what happens in the rest of the world, we're not too sure about yet.
Okay, so July, a pretty critical month then. I mean, I mean, one of the other things I should say to listeners, I mean, the quarterly contains a first section which looks at various price indicators and analyses, and one of them highlights the forward curve and compares it to kind of storage levels. And the forward curve is looking rather positive for 2021, Mike, and essentially actually implies a storage utilization level well below what we've seen in 2019 and 2020. Do you think the futures curve is too optimistic? I mean, might it actually encourage extra LNG supplies that could swamp the market again next year?
Yeah, well, this is where I give my two-handed economist reply again. I mean, both statements, they're kind of mutually exclusive. They can't both be right. So if LNG gets shut in, then that takes supply off the market, a bit like OPEC restraining production. So you'll get higher prices. If LNG doesn't get in, it swamps the market, and then you get lower prices. So the forward curve to be correct, in a sense, or the outturn to be on line with the futures curve, then we need to get basically more cargo shut in next year as well. The key thing really is the margin, and while that's been negative, it's not just the forward curve for Asia and Europe that matters. Also, Henry Hub. I mean, the lower Henry Hub is, that helps the margin, and Henry Hub for futures curve at the moment is showing rising prices next year. But at the current levels of that futures curve, sort of 240, 250, then you may well get more dry gas from Haynesville and Marcellus produced, which will bring Henry Hub back down a little bit. So it's all a bit of a balancing act. I mean, the current forward curve, as you said, I mean, it's basically over $4 for TTF. So we would need quite significant shut-ins to achieve that, or a very big surge in Asian LNG demand, which we kind of might come back to. So on balance, you might say, well, we might get somewhere in between. You know, as soon as the forward curve starts to rise, you get more LNG produced, which brings the prices down. So the market is going to be quite dynamic, I think, next year.
Okay, one to look out for. I mean, although, yeah, as you say, the market appears to be assuming that there will be further shut-ins next year, which may be over-optimistic. Jack, let me turn to you, because the topic of storage is clearly, as well as LNG supply, are clearly top of the agenda at the moment. And in the quarterly, you've written about the current situation in Europe. Why don't we start by, first of all, you giving us an update on where we are with current storage levels and utilization in 2020.
Yeah, so thank you, and again, glad to be back on the podcast. So European storage as a whole, that is the EU plus UK, we're now at 84% of capacity, stocks as a percentage of capacity. At the July injection rate, so that we've seen just since the, you know, from the 1st to the 18th of July, if that is continued through the rest of the summer, then we would reach around 98% of capacity, that is effectively full, by the end of September. So that puts us actually moving towards a similar situation to where we were last year. But crucially, that would bring us to full storage capacity before the winter gas demand starts to pick up. So that sort of late September would be our crunch point, if you like. But the other thing to remember about storage is that is one figure for the whole of Europe. And obviously there are significant disparities between different regions of Europe. So we will see storage facilities reaching full capacity in some parts of Europe, perhaps a couple of weeks before others. So we will see a sort of ripple effect, if you like, on sort of constraints around storage and then their impact on prices.
So, I mean, that's interesting because that's quite a significant improvement on where we were even a month or so ago. And that's because, I presume, the other thing you looked at is LNG supply. That's one of the reasons, is that LNG supply has dropped in June. So actually the outlooks, you know, for storage is a bit better than we thought.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, we've seen, and Mike has alluded to this as well in some of his comments, that European LNG imports, particularly from the United States, were lower in June. But we've seen this as well just in the last few days, that net storage injections in Europe as a whole have slowed substantially, even compared to what they were in the first 2 weeks of July. So looking forward, it does seem that the lower LNG imports into Europe are being fed through into lower storage injections. In terms of how this has played out, Mike has already alluded to the reduced exports from the US, and we've also seen, obviously, the reduced LNG exports from Russia. We've seen Qatari volumes, to a certain extent, being redirected from Europe to Asia, but really for Russia and the US, and to a lesser extent, Nigeria, we've seen that the lost volumes in Europe have not been shifted over to Asia, where LNG imports have been relatively flat. So they haven't fallen in quite the way that European LNG imports have, but equally they're not growing as they may well have done were it not for the broader COVID situation.
Okay, I mean that's interesting, isn't it? And I think the question of demand in Asia, Mike, if I can just quickly turn to you on that, essentially, we're not seeing higher demand in Asia dragging LNG away from Europe. So this is really about shut-ins having an effect at the moment. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Asia is a mixed picture. I mean, in China's demand has been very strong, and LNG imports have been rising there again. And also seen in last month a bounce back in India following foreign reductions. So the traditional LNG importers are sort of ahead of the game in terms of year-on-year changes. Then the emerging markets are down a bit. So on balance, Asian demand isn't sort of rising that much. So it is all about shut-ins in Europe. But I think it's one of the reasons that you know, maybe less gas going to storage is possibly that the demand may be sort of higher than we're thinking it is. There's been signs of some lignite to gas switching, in addition to coal to gas switching in Europe, which is maybe sort of buoying gas demand up a bit. And then there's talk in France, a lot of the nukes may go offline for maintenance, which will build gas demand up there a little bit. Plus the UK sort of seems to have sort of higher demand than we might have anticipated. So there are sort of straws in the wind, if you like, that possibly consumption in Europe may be a bit higher than we were thinking.
Okay, that's encouraging. And I guess, Jack, one other point for you on this. You have written about storage in Ukraine and that the availability of that this year. Is that having an impact already? Is that helping to reduce the pressure on European storage?
To an extent, I would say so, yeah. So Ukraine has around 30 BCM of storage capacity, which at present is approximately half full. I wouldn't expect that between now and the end of summer that we'll see European traders using the entirety of that remaining capacity, simply because there are bottlenecks for the movement of gas from the main sort of EU market into Ukraine. But it does relieve some of the pressure, particularly, I would say, in relation to gas storage in Central Europe. So obviously, Ukrainian storage wouldn't really have much of an effect by way of alleviating storage capacity constraints on the Iberian Peninsula or in Northwest Europe, but certainly in relation to storage in the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary, even in southern Germany, then yes, I would say that it's having some effect, but it's not a game changer.
Okay, thanks. So you also have written in the quarterly about one of the other key components of European supply, which is obviously imports from Russia. First of all, how have they reacted overall to the crisis?
Well, I think we've seen a willingness to scale back pipeline exports. So the Gazprom CEO, Alexei Miller, just a couple of months ago said that he would expect total pipeline exports to fall from around 200 BCM down to around 166 BCM. So clearly, Gazprom is expecting that its pipeline exports to Europe will be scaled back.
And indeed they already have been. I mean, the numbers for the first half of the year show what?
Well, we saw the most dramatic effect actually happened before COVID, back in January, when Russian pipeline exports to Europe actually declined very sharply for a period of about 4 to 6 weeks. Although this was rather more related to some of the uncertainties around its gas transit contract with Ukraine and the fact that both Gazprom and Gazprom's and consumers and customers had been laying gas into storage across Europe in anticipation of a potential interruption in Ukrainian gas transit. So in the first part of the year, some of that gas was being taken out of storage where we would in a regular year have seen that being delivered by pipeline. So that was a pre-COVID set of circumstances. Once the lockdowns started to kick in, then we did see several months really where pipeline supplies to Europe from all suppliers, so it's Russia, Norway and North Africa, Algeria, were down relative to LNG that performed relatively strongly. But then in June, when we saw LNG supplies to Europe drop, then we saw a bit of a rebound on the pipeline. So there is this very definite competition between LNG and pipeline supplies in Europe. And I think that that Gazprom has reacted to that by adapting, by limiting some of its volumes. It clearly doesn't want to get into a price war and drive prices any lower than they are at present. One of the other interesting things that we've written about recently, of course, is Gazprom's electronic sales platform as a tool of flexibility for managing their sales in this sort of current set of circumstances. And what we've seen over the last month or two really is a shift away from sales for prompt delivery, whether that's Gazprom's own strategy, or whether there just isn't a demand for it from the consumers. But by contrast, what they're doing is selling increasing volumes for delivery further into the future. So that is, you know, Q4 of this year and then through into 2021 and even as far out as summer 2022. So whilst they're accepting that their short-term pipeline exports are going to be reduced, they are trying their best to lock in sales for delivery further into the future.
Okay, so again, another classic sort of case of Russian adaptation, which is, I guess, no great surprise, but interesting to see. And I guess the other question around Russian exports and adaptation is around the whole issue of export routes. You've touched on Ukraine Transit already, and we've seen that contract signed at lower volumes than historically, and we've also seen the end of the long term contract for transit through Poland via Yamal Europe. So how do you see the strategy around Russian transit routes, and what are the volumes telling you at the moment?
Yeah, so I think if we talk about grand strategy, then it's very much one of having pipelines that it owns or controls that allow it to access its key markets, and then prioritizing the supply through those pipelines, and then really using the other routes that pass through transit countries as some kind of flex. So with regard to, let's say, the northern half of Gazprom's exports to Europe, then we can see that throughout the year of the first half of 2020 through to the present, Nord Stream has remained fully loaded pretty much on a day-to-day basis. Meanwhile, we've seen fluctuations in exports via the Yamal Europe pipeline through Belarus and Poland to Germany. So that's clearly a route that Gazprom regards now as flex. And you highlighted the end of the long-term Polish transit contract, and that's really rather key. Because under European sort of EU capacity booking processes, these capacity auctions, Gazprom really can book only the capacity that it needs. And what we've seen is that it has booked what you might call baseload transit capacity via Poland, and then retains in its back pocket the ability to book additional capacity as and when it needs it on a sort of a day ahead or a month ahead basis. I would expect that we will see a similar situation in the southern half of its exports once the onward sections of Turkish Stream are complete. So that's particularly the construction in Bulgaria and Serbia onto Hungary. And that once that is complete, I would expect that route is prioritized in terms of trying to get gas to Serbia and Hungary. And then exports via Ukraine becomes again the flex. So overall, you know, that's what we've seen in the first half of this year, that it's a fully loading of the pipelines that it owns and then flex on the other routes. Where there's a difference between the two is simply in that Turkish import demand is lower than it was last year and substantially down on 2018, which is why the first line of Turkish Stream isn't being used at full capacity, simply because overall Russian pipeline exports to Turkey are down. So that's
and just briefly, is there direct competition between Yamal and Ukraine, or are they as separate as you suggest? You know, Yamal for Northern Europe, Ukraine for Southern Europe, or is there competition between the two in Central Europe?
I would rather regard them as somewhat separate, for the simple reason that I've spent a good while now watching gas flows in Central Europe, and particularly what we're seeing is a lack of flows from Slovakia into the Czech Republic for onward delivery to Germany. So essentially, gas that's arriving in Slovakia from Ukraine at Uzhgorod or Velké Kapušany, that is not being passed on to the Czech Republic and thence onto Germany. And if anything, we're seeing gas flows in the opposite direction from the Czech Republic into Slovakia for these physical reverse deliveries to Ukraine. So I would consider that gas flowing from Ukraine into Slovakia is by and large being delivered onto Austria and thence onto Italy. So we can consider it to be a corridor as such. And in that regard, somewhat separate to the northern corridor of deliveries via the Yamal Europe pipeline into the Gazprom market area.
Okay, great, thanks. Two interesting articles in the quarterly, which I'd encourage people to read, and I'll give you the download details later. Mike, let me come back to you now. the third piece in the quarterly is about your work on the impact of COVID-19 on global gas markets, and you've expanded it and extended the timeline. Can you just give us a quick reminder, first of all, about your initial views for 2020?
Yeah, when we did the first one back in April, I mean, all the lockdowns had certainly in Europe had only just really started. So what we were looking therefore at was a sort of short, sharp hit to demand, then a recovery. So it was a sort of overall a 3% decline for the year in global gas demand, which is broadly in line with the IMF's World Economic Outlook in April of a sort of V-shaped projection. Within that, though, LNG trade growth in 2020 was still expected as more supply comes on. We had sort of around about a 5% growth in LNG imports, although that was half what had been sort of the pre-COVID-19 estimate. But we still expect LNG trade to grow in 2020.
And so now you've updated things a bit, and economically things have got a bit worse. And so what's that done for your outlook for gas demand for this year and indeed for 2021?
Yeah, obviously we've got a bit of a weaker outlook for demand. We're now looking at a probably 3.5% fall in global gas demand in 2020. That's not as bad as the revised IMF GDP outlook, which is almost a 5% fall. LNG trade grows, but only just about now in 2019, as a result of the significant shut-ins, yeah, maybe more than we were expecting earlier on in the year. In 2021, we're looking at a sort of a bounce back, so that, you know, global gas demand is bounces back to around the 2019 level. So we've got a 3.5% fall this year, then a sort of 4% rise next year. But that is some 3% or 3.5% lower than a pre-COVID-19 scenario. So LNG trade will grow. But how much really depends on the question we talked about earlier, is whether LNG gets shut in. If Europe absorbs it, then we possibly have lower prices, or Asian LNG demand grows very rapidly, then we could see, you know, another maybe 5-6% growth in LNG trade. If you see LNG being shut in again, that takes probably about half that growth. So while demand in 2021 is back to 2019 levels, you know, supply has not stood still in the meantime. We've got more LNG with obviously a lot of the US trains coming on this year and sort of ramping up, and also more pipeline gas from Russia into Europe, Nord Stream and Turk Stream, Jack's talked about, and the Azeri gas. Plus, you know, you go out to the Far East, we've got more Russian pipeline gas going to China. So demand is back to where it was. You know, the world has moved and there's more supply available on the market.
Can you talk a little bit about some of those regional differences? I mean, you've mentioned Asia. I presume demand in Asia is looking a bit more bullish than demand in Europe in particular.
Yes, that's not usually too difficult. I mean, Europe is sort of the sick man of Europe is Europe now. So it's a sort of very slow recovery there. We've seen a very big fall this year and sort of a weakish recovery next year. Also, US is also weak in 2021, whereas sort of gas in power in the US has held up, seems to be holding up reasonably well this year. There's already potentially quite a few renewables coming in the US next year, so gas demand wasn't expected to rise very much. China, as we've said, is going to be very, very strong, sort of anticipating next year in gas demand. Middle East also, you know, bouncing back. We're expecting strong growth there anyway. Other Asia's also rebounding back to normal fairly quickly. So it's really the weaknesses in Europe and North America, but more than offset by the Asian markets.
And you've taken your forecast out to 2025 this time. So when do you actually see the COVID-19 impact finally being recovered, if you like? When does the market start to rebalance?
Well, it's kind of two different questions there. One is, I think by 2025, we see the market being back globally to the sort of the pre-COVID-19 forecast levels. In slight contrast, the IEA in their gas 2020, which saw a sort of almost a permanent reduction in gas demand levels compared to pre-COVID-19 forecasts. Some regions will get back very quickly. Asia, for example, Middle East again. Europe is the slowest to recover, and it may be 2025 before Europe sort of gets back to, inverted commas, normal. In terms of the market rebalancing, then LNG demand grows faster than additional supply through 2024. We don't have that much supply coming on. so the market will tighten. But, you know, but the prospects of, you know, 2018 levels of gas prices, you know, $8, $9, $10 look extremely remote, certainly in our view. I mean, if you look at being a supplier, a return to $6 gas before the next wave of LNG supply hits the market in the mid-2020s, that would be a real bonus for them. And so something above $6, other than for a short period of time in 2024, doesn't look that likely.
And have you been pushing back your expectations of when new LNG supply is going to come on?
Yeah, we have. I mean, there's two elements to that. One is the projects which have taken FID, and we've heard some of the construction being halted because of the COVID-19. But in Canada and Mozambique and elsewhere, and Golden Pass pushed theirs back a bit. Well, you know, the Qataris are expected to continue, obviously, to bring on their six trains, but maybe slower than before. So we've generally pushed back everything sort of by about 6 months. So things coming on in 24 and now in 25 and so on from there on.
So we're coming to the end of our time now. And I've probably not too much time to go into detail on this, but in the quarterly, there's one last piece on Russia's gas export strategy in the East, looking at the impact of the Power of Siberia and potentially Power of Siberia 2. I think I'll leave listeners to download the document and read the full story, which was written by me. But Mike, perhaps I could ask you to give us a quick view on how you see this Russian pipeline gas in the East affecting demand for LNG in Asia. Is it going to be a big and important factor?
Yeah, it will be a very important factor. I mean, there's sort of been differing views as to how they might ramp up to the sort of the 38 BCM capacity or even close to that. So it will, depending on the timing of it, impact on China LNG demand. There's only so much the market can take. It's possible we could see after 2021, maybe after 2022, a year or two of very little growth LNG demand in China. Have a big surge next year, but then sort of dampening down a little bit. But it's not just pipeline gas and LNG that matters in China. Production is also the key. You know, the import gap is a difference between two very large numbers. So if production is 5 or 10% different, that can make all the difference to the prospects for LNG demand. So it's a little bit watch this space in China. But we could see a bit of a roller coaster ride in LNG imports into China over the next 4 to 5 years.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. Well, we have reached the end of our time now. So thanks to Mike and Jack for a very interesting discussion. I hope that you, the listeners, have found that informative and interesting. You can find the latest Gas Quarterly on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org, where you can also find our full podcast series as well as all our other output. If you'd like further information about the Institute, then you can also find our details on the website. With all that said, it just remains for me to wish good health to you and your families. So thank you for listening and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts as well as all our written research on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.